good morning to each one, and greetings in Jesus' name. It's a joy to be with you. It's a joy to be living the Christian life. Thank you, Brother Keith, for that Sunday school teaching. It's a bit of a heavy subject, maybe, but what a joy to be part of a church that cares about purity. There's many churches that you can find that you can live how you want during the week, and you won't be challenged, but it's such a treasure to be part of a church that will challenge you and wants to see you make it to glory, wants to be redemptive, wants to, we work together. We do it imperfectly sometimes. We don't get it always all right, but that's our goal, is to help and to be a blessing. In a minute here, I'm going to write a couple quotes, two quotes. It was going to be just one, but I heard another good one that I'm going to jot up there. Before we do that, consider with me the Old Testament story of Hezekiah. Hezekiah is real sick. He's laying on his bed, and he's feeling like he's going to die. And into this palace walks a man named Isaiah, a prophet. Comes up to him and says, "Hey, I have a message from God for you, King Hezekiah. The message is that you better prepare your house. Get your house set in order, because you're gonna die and not live." Imagine hearing that story, or hearing that word from God. Hezekiah, he responded like we would respond. He pled with God. He said, "God, look what all I did for you." He wept. Before Isaiah even got out of the court, God gave him another message. He said, "Look, go tell Hezekiah I'm going to give him 15 more years." How would that make you feel? Would that be sad? Would part of you be sad to know that you were that close home, and now you got to journey for 15 more years? Or would you be rejoicing that you got 15 more years to spend with your family? How would you use those 15 years? I'm going to write a quote here as you ponder that. It's going to take me probably a minute and a half, so maybe 2 minutes. quote that my wife shared with me maybe 2 weeks ago or so, and I resonated with it. I'm going to read it this time. I shall pass through this world but once. Any good, therefore, that I can do, or any kindness that I can show to any human being, let me do it now. Let me not defer, or neglect it, for I shall not pass this way again. And I'm just going to take the time to write one more quote that I heard today. That's something that stood out to me about the devotions this morning. God is the only one that can give true meaning in life. By Orion Stallspruce. Do I focus on what I can get out of life or what I can do for others? So, just maybe to get started here, who's 40 years old here? 40. You're over 40. Yeah, I was going to say, you seemed a little, I thought you were a little older than that. So you're over 40. Anybody like right on 40? How about 39? Yes, 39. Andrew is 39. So how many minutes do you think a 40-year-old has lived? Just without doing mental math. I mean, those of you that can really do crunch numbers, how many minutes would you just guess? Just throw out some numbers there. What do you think? Alan, what would your guess be? Okay. Caleb, what would your guess be? A million? Any other brave guesses? I will not embarrass you. Try not to embarrass you. A 40-year-old has lived, according to my calculator, has lived 21,024,000 minutes. 21,024,000 minutes. Each day we're given 1,440. And then each year we have about 525,600 minutes. Each year. So 40 years old, you've lived over 21 million minutes. Lots of minutes. Lots of minutes. A few questions, and then we're going to look at some teaching here in Luke 19. When does time start? In the beginning, we have a verse in Genesis 1:1 that says, "In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth." That's when time started. Now, for each of us, we each had a start. Each of us had a beginning. From the youngest to the oldest, we all had a start. And we obviously are unapologetic that life begins at conception. It does not begin when a child has a heartbeat or anything like that. Life begins at conception. But as you hold that young child, they had a start. But they don't have an end. That's a living soul that will never end. Each of us here has a living soul inside of us that will never end. We all had a start, but there's part of us that will, it's a process in motion that will never end. When does time end? I'm just going to read a verse from Revelation 10, 5 and 6, two verses. "And the angel which I saw stand upon the sea and upon the earth lifted up his hand to heaven, and swear by him that liveth forever and ever, who created heaven, and the things that therein are, and the earth and the things that therein are, and the sea and the things which therein, that there should be time no longer. There's coming a day that we're looking forward to where time will stop on earth. It's done. And we walk away from it. We walk away from it. Time is done. All the things on this earth will leave. Maybe you know what? I think at this point now, we're going to go to Luke chapter 19, and we're going to read this parable that begins in verse 11 of Luke 19. Looking at Luke 19, verse 11. And as they heard these things, he added and spake a parable, because he was nigh to Jerusalem, and because they thought that the kingdom of God should immediately appear. He said, therefore, a certain nobleman went into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom, and to return. And he called his 10 servants, and delivered them 10 pounds, and said unto them, occupy till I come. But his citizens hated him, and sent a message after him, saying, we will not have this man to reign over us. And it came to pass that when he was returned, having received the kingdom, then he commanded these servants to be called unto him to whom he had given the money, that he might know how much every man had gained by trading. Then came the first, saying, Lord, thy pound hath gained 10 pounds. And he said unto him, well, thou good servant, because thou hast been faithful in a very little, have thou authority over 10 cities. And the second came, saying, Lord, thy pound hath gained 5 pounds. And he said likewise to him, be thou also over 5 cities. And another came, saying, Lord, behold, here is thy pound, which I have kept laid up in a napkin. For I feared thee, because thou art an austere man. Thou takest up that thou layest not down, and reapest that thou didst not sow. And he saith unto him, out of thine own mouth will I judge thee, thou wicked servant. Thou knewest that I was an austere man, taking up that I laid not down, and reaping that I did not sow. Wherefore then gavest not thou my money into the bank, that at my coming I might have required mine own with usury? And he said unto them that stood by, take from him the pound, and give it to him that hath 10 pounds. And they said unto him, Lord, he hath 10 pounds. For I say unto you that unto every one which hath shall be given, and from him that hath not, even that he hath, shall be taken away from him. But those mine enemies which would not that I should reign over them, bring hither and slay them before me. We're going to focus in on the 3 servants here, starting maybe pulling some thoughts out of verse 13. And he called his 10 servants and delivered them 10 pounds and said unto them, occupy till I come. The thought I want to pull out of here is that God has given each of us talents. He didn't forget somebody. He didn't somehow pass over somebody. But he has given each person talents. Sometimes we look around and we say, well, if I would be given what that person was, then I could do something. Well, God didn't give what he gave that person, but he gave you what he gave you. And how can you use that? One of those talents, and that's what we're going to focus on today, is time. There's many talents God has given us. And we could talk about many of them, but we're going to talk about the one, time. God has given us each time, not the same amount of time. He's given us each time. Also out of verse 13, we want to pull out the phrase there, the sentence, or part of the sentence, occupy till I come. And what that would mean is use these talents till I come. Trade with them until I come. It doesn't mean go bury these talents and go do about doing your own thing until I come, but it means use these, use what I've given you till I come. trade with them. Out of verse 15, and it came to pass that when he was returned, having received the kingdom, that he commanded these servants to be called unto him, to whom he had given the money, that he might know how much each every man had gained by trading. We are each accountable. We are each accountable. There's a day of accountability. I'm not accountable for how you have, well, you know, take this with a grain of salt, but I'm not accountable for what you do with what you're given. I'm going to be held account for what I do with what I'm given. What maybe, I don't mean to make us sound individualistic, we're going to be accountable as a church with what our church does with what we're given. But I'm not going to be judged by somebody else's choices. On that day, I'm judged by me. How did I invest? Okay, out of verse 16, then came the first, saying, Lord, thy pound hath gained 10 pounds. And out of this, I guess I just see an humble attitude, an humble, industrious attitude. Lord, thy pound hath gained 10 pounds. He didn't say, look, God, what I did with everything. Look at all this stuff. I got it all in a list here, what all I did, and I'm expecting some applause from you, God. He just came in and said, look, your pound gained 10 pounds. It's just an humble attitude. Verse 17. Well, thou good servant, because thou hast been faithful in a very little, have thou authority over 10 cities. It was a test to prepare for greater things. God gives us tests. God teaches us in little things. That's how we do with in the physical world too, right? With children, with that, you don't set them on a big combine when they're 6 years old, typically. But you might start with the lawnmower when they're a certain age, or start with a battery-operated thing, and you test. You see if they can handle that, and it's a preparing for greater things, and those greater things are in our future if we're faithful. Verse 18, and the second came saying, Lord, thy pound hath gained 5 pounds. Here again, I believe we see an humble attitude. And he only gained 5 pounds, but there was no condemnation that was given to him. He didn't have to gain 10 pounds with those 5 pounds he was given. He just did the best with what he had. And this phrase comes to my mind. I don't know the context of it right now, but where Jesus said, she hath done what she could. And I think God is very interested in what we do with what we're given. What we're given. And there's a blessing in doing the best we can with what we have. Verse 20, we have a little different situation here. And another came saying, Lord, behold, here is thy pound, which I have kept laid up in a napkin. Now here, we see a little different feeling, don't we? Instead of thy pound sat here in my napkin, didn't do anything, he said, look, I kept it in a napkin. He's almost like, and he's saying, how does he say it? Here is thy pound, which I have kept laid up in a napkin. It doesn't seem like he took ownership of that, does he? Like, and tried to use it, and tried to, you know, how can we... But he took that pound, just put it in a napkin, closed it up, and there was no kind of indifferent feeling, indifference. Here's this pound. I preserved it. There's things in our lives that we're given. What do? Do we just preserve them? Put them in a jar, put the lid on, and we can it? Or do we use it to bless others, to share, and let it give an increase? Why did he keep it in a napkin? Why did he keep it in a napkin? I think in this passage we see he says that he was fearful. He didn't want to lose it. That's sometimes why we can keep things in napkins, is we don't want to lose them. But But you know what? God gives tremendous talents to poor, frail humans. He gives time to us. We're focusing on time, but think about a pure, innocent child God gives to inexperienced parents. Tremendous talent, tremendous potential. But those parents sometimes don't know what to do. God, help us raise this child. And they cry out to God. But what do you do? Do you pull down in fear and just say, well, or do you say, God will help me. We're gonna use these talents, use whatever God has given us. We're not gonna pull back in fear, but we're gonna use them. I think another way, it doesn't say it in this passage, but I think why he kept it in his napkin is this is surmising, but I think he wanted to pursue his own things. Just knowing human nature. Somebody gives you something and says, invest this till I come. It takes work, it takes effort to actually invest it. And that's going to pull time away from your other pursuits. So, today we're just going to focus on the talent of time. There's many talents God has given, and we're going to be accountable for how we've given. And time is one of those. A question that I thought of to get started here is, and look at the clock. I didn't mean to word it that way, because we are started. But how do you waste time? How do you waste time? And then we're going to look at how do you invest your time wisely. How do you waste time? And I just got a little story that I want to read to make a point on this. I guess the first thing I have jotted down, how do you waste time, is by not preparing for your next life. Just a little story here. There is an old story of a jester who sometimes made very wise utterances. One day, so this was back in the days when the kings had the ultimate authority, and sometimes they would get a jester to keep it a little more lighthearted. And so this one time, this jester, he said something really foolish. And the king gave him, you know, they were all laughing. The king gave him a staff and said, look, you carry this staff with you every day until you find somebody more foolish than you, more foolish than yourself. So he carried that with him through life, kind of as a badge of his foolishness. Well, one day the king is on his deathbed, and he's dying. And he gathered his people around him, and he said, look, I'm going on a journey. I don't know where I'm going, but I'm going. The jester said, hey, I have a question for you. He said, all through your life, when you go on a journey, you send people ahead to prepare for that. Have you prepared for this journey? The king said, no. He said, I have not prepared. I do not have any preparations made. The jester gave that staff to the king, and he said, finally, I found somebody more foolish than myself. That's how we waste time, is not preparing for the next life. Just a couple other things I jotted down for how we waste time. Life is too short to hold a grudge. Life is too short to live in bitterness. Life is too short to hide sin. Life is too short to lay up treasures for ourselves and not be rich towards God. Life is too short to fight. How do I invest my time wisely? Start now. With investment, I'm not a professional investor, so don't take this advice and use it professionally. But two important components are time and investing in the right thing. If you could backtrack to 1980, And if you would have invested $1,000 into Apple stock when it first came out, that would currently be worth $3.2 million. So that would have been investing in the right thing, right, financially, if you could backtrack. Now, land prices, that goes up. There's lots of things that go up with time. But there's a lot of things that go down, too. There's been tech companies that you could have invested money in that wouldn't have brought you anything. So it's critical to invest in the right thing. And also the timing's important. It's critical to start now. 1 Timothy 4:12 says, "Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word, in conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity." If you are a youth, you don't have time to wait to start investing your time. Start now. If you are a busy parent, you don't have to wait until life starts to slow down. Invest now. And if you are a grandparent, don't you dare start thinking that your time of investment is over. Invest now. So, how do I invest my time wisely? To answer this question, we're going to look at some teachings, first of all, in Ephesians 5, and then we're also going to look at some examples of how Jesus invested his time on earth. You know what, as far as for the sake of time, we're going to read Ephesians 5, 14 to 21, but we're not going to make many comments on it. But I believe it's a good passage for this subject, but we're going to hold off on many comments. Ephesians 5, verses 14 through 21. "Wherefore he saith, Awake, thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give thee light. See then that ye walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise." Verse 16 is where our title for the sermon is found, Redeeming the Time. Redeeming the time, because the days are evil. "Wherefore be ye not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. And be not drunk with wine, wherein is excess, but be filled with the Spirit. Speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord, giving thanks always for all things unto God and the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God." I'm going to stop reading there. And that's a good passage to meditate on. I just maybe just point out two action words in verse 14 is awake and arise. We live in a sleeping world. We live in a dying world. And if we join in with our world, that means we're going to sleep with them. We're going to die with them. We have to be counterculture. We have to arise and we have to awake. Those are two action words that take effort. All right, so we're going to look now, next here, at how did Jesus invest his time? And I guess I enjoy a subject like this, trying to think about, so what do I do? Should I not be working? Should I just be witnessing to my neighbors every day instead of working? Or how do we do this? How do we invest in God's kingdom and the lives of others and still hop in that truck and shift those gears and still earn your food for your family? So I just enjoy thinking about, how did Jesus do it? What did he do when he walked around in this world? I have a number of points, and point number one is he went about doing good. Acts 10:38 says how God anointed Jesus of Nazareth with the Holy Ghost and with power, who went about doing good and healing all that were oppressed of the devil, for God was with him. So God gives all of us opportunities to do good. Oftentimes those opportunities have work boots on. They don't come as grand and glorious things at the perfect time, but they come kind of packaged as work. but they come to all of us. He went about doing good. Number two, he invested time teaching his disciples. he spent time with just his disciples sometimes. He had a lot of things to teach them, and I think that's good for us to take note of. There's times where we need a maybe some special mentoring or special time with close Sunday school, for example, or we need that close teaching, some close relationships to help us in our journey. Is there a young person that you can invest time in mentoring and having some deep discussions that go deeper than, I mean, they can start shallow, but you know, they go deeper than just, you know, how hot it is today or what the weather's like. Number three, he invested much time in prayer. He would rise up a great while before day. There's one time he spent, I think I have that verse jotted down, he spent all night in prayer. Luke 6:12. It came to pass in those days that he went out to a mountain to pray and continued all night in prayer to God. We can't do that every night. Our wives would come looking for us if we do that every night. But is there a special burden that you're praying about? Keep praying. You know, and I'm talking to myself, but you know, just it takes time. You need that deep prayer life with God. Number four, he invested time in children. Matthew 19:14 says, "But Jesus said, suffer little children and forbid them not to come unto me, for of such is the kingdom of heaven." How do we invest time in children? Parenting is a big way, but I thought of teaching school. Do we teach school as a, something to kind of do? Or if you're a school teacher, do you have a passion, a vision for teaching these children? Is it all about the children, or is it about, you know, I could be a good teacher if it wasn't for these children here, you know? And sometimes we have a heart for children. Number five, he never wasted time. So as I thought about this point, I thought, well, didn't he waste time when he was going to, wasn't that Jairus or Darius? I think it was Jairus. Yeah, Jairus. Jairus came to him and said, look, I have a little girl that is, he didn't say it this calmly, but he said, I have a little girl that's sick on the point of death. I need you to come and heal her. And Jesus, I'm sure it made Jairus feel good. Jesus came and he's walking, but he's going pretty slow. He's walking. He's not. And if I would have been Jairus, don't you think you would have just been like, get out of the way. Jesus is coming today to help me. Well, Jesus is coming slow. The crowd is thronging him, and I can almost just sense that desperation of Jairus. Like, Jesus, aren't you wasting time? And then this lady comes and touches the hem of Jesus' garment. And Jesus stops and talks to her, and I can just sense that. I don't know. I don't know if you've ever called an ambulance for a child, but you want that ambulance to come. I mean, this is like an ambulance that has a flat tire. Let's get this thing going. And I shouldn't say, I mean, that's maybe wording a little bit, but I just sense that Jairus' frustration of, but you look at how the story ends. Look at how the story ends. This woman is healed. And they get there. Well, first of all, they send a messenger that said, don't even bother him. Daughter's dead, and I can just almost sense that resentment in Jairus's heart. Just come on, if you would have only come sooner. But you look at how the story ends. Jesus sends the people out, the mourners, the people that are kind of deriding him for saying that she's just sleeping. He sends them out. He says, look, and he raises her to life. What does he say? He says, Talitha kumai, which is being interpreted, damsel, I say unto thee, arise. And the damsel arose and walked. Jesus did not waste time. But see, I think in our lives, why I'm making a point about this is in our lives, things that look like they waste time are actually God's timing. And so don't resent that. God has a timing that's above what we can think. Number six, he did his father's business. And he said unto them, when he was 12 years old, he got separated from his parents, and his parents were looking for him. And they finally found him, and his mom, just like a typical mom, she's like, listen, didn't you know this, that we were looking for you? And he said, wist ye not that I must be about my father's business? Luke 2:49 says, John 9:4 says, I must work the works of him that sent me. While it is day, the night cometh when no man can work. We are also tasked with doing our father's business. Number seven, Jesus was always present. When he was on the cross in a lot of agony, tremendous agony, what did he do? He looked over and he saw his mom. And he looked over and he saw John. And he said, John, would you be able to take care of my mom after I'm gone? He was present. He wasn't distracted with sending a text message to Peter telling him to bring more bread to something. He wasn't distracted. He was present always. Somebody go up to him, ask him a question. He would take time to hear that. He was present. Now, I just want to take this time to read a little story here, and you may have read it or heard it already. The title is, and this is building off of, it's building off the point about being present. Thinking about children and parenting, and children, the way they spell love, from what I've heard and experienced, the way they spell love is T-I-M-E, is how they spell the word love. And so this story, I guess, just illustrates that. So the title is A Wasted Day. In the faint light of the attic, an old man, tall and stooped, bent his great frame and made his way to a stack of boxes that sat near one of the little half windows. Brushing aside a wisp of cobwebs, he tilted the top box toward the light and began to carefully lift out one old photograph album after another. Eyes once bright, but now dim, searched longingly for the source that had drawn him here. It began with the fond recollection of the love of his life, long gone, and somewhere in these albums was a photo of her he hoped to rediscover. Silent as a mouse, he patiently opened the long-buried treasures and soon was lost in a sea of memories. Setting aside one of the dusty albums, he pulled from the box what appeared to be a journal from his grown son's childhood. He could not recall ever having seen it before, or that his son had ever kept a journal. Opening the yellowed pages, he glanced over a short reading, and his lips curved in an unconscious smile. Even his eyes brightened as he read the words that spoke clear and sweet to his soul. It was the voice of the little boy who had grown up far too fast in this very house, and whose voice had grown fainter and fainter over the years. In the utter silence of the attic, the words of a guileless 6-year-old worked their magic and carried the old man back to a time almost forgotten. Entry after entry stirred a sentimental hunger in his heart, like the longing a gardener feels in the winter for the fragrance of spring flowers. But it was accompanied by the painful memory that his son's simple recollections of those days were far different than his own. But how different? Reminded that he had kept a daily journal of his business activities over the years, he closed his son's journal and turned to leave, having forgotten the cherished photo that originally triggered his search. Hunched over to keep from bumping his head on the rafters, the old man stepped to the wooden stairway and made his descent, then headed down a carpeted stairway that led to the den. Opening a glass cabinet door, he reached in and pulled out an old business journal. Turning, he sat down at his desk and placed the two journals beside each other. His was leather-bound and engraved neatly with his name in gold, while his son's was tattered and the name Jimmy had been nearly scuffed from its surface. He ran a long, skinny finger over the letters as though he could restore what had been worn away with time and use. As he opened his journal, the old man's eyes fell upon an inscription that stood out because it was so brief in comparison to other days. In his own neat handwriting were these words: "Wasted the whole day fishing with Jimmy. Didn't catch a thing." With a deep sigh and a shaking hand, he took Jimmy's journal and found the boy's entry for the same day, June 4. Large scrawling letters pressed deeply into the paper read: "Went fishing with my dad. Best day of my life." Number 8, he was willing to invest time with needy people. With whom did he have meals? A lot of times it was the needy people, wasn't it? He sat there at the well with the Samaritan woman, something that people of his standing would not do. He taught us that when we invite people to a feast, invite those that can't repay you. Number 9, he spent time in silence. I don't have a chapter and verse for this one, but I'm thinking about him going out all night and praying to God. He had silence. How do you describe silence? I guess the best way I know to describe silence is just simply take time to just be still. Be still and know that God, and know God. Just be still. Take time in silence. Number 10, he fulfilled his time. When he was on the cross, he said, "It is finished." When Simeon, an older man, he was in the temple and he got to hold baby Jesus. And it had been prophesied to him that he would get to see Jesus. And so he's holding baby Jesus. And he said these words. He said, "Lord, now lettest thou thy servant depart in peace according to thy word." When it is time for us to face our end, can we rest in God's timing? God has a timing. So in conclusion, the best investment we can make is preparing for the next life. Get prepared and stay prepared. Invest our time in building in God's kingdom and in building up others. And when do we start? Tomorrow. Next week. When do we start? Start now. I'm just going to read a couple of verses here. It says, I think this is out of Hebrews. "Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God, but exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. For we are made partakers of Christ if we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast unto the end. While it is said, today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts, as in the provocation." Let's kneel for a word of prayer.